From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, presidential candidates make a swing through New York State days before the April 19th primary. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on New York's importance in this year's presidential contest, and will report on Equal Pay Day for women in New York. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Presidential candidates Bernie Sanders, John Kasich, and Donald Trump made a swing through New York this week, stumping for president. And Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders spoke at a rally in Albany Monday before about 4,000 supporters. As the Legislative Gazette's Patrick Garrett reports, the Vermont U.S. Senator emphasized his usual themes, but also called for a nationwide ban on hydrofracking.
Outside the Washington Avenue Armory, it was overcast with high winds. Inside, high energy. Before taking the stage, Sanders spoke to supporters who couldn't get in. There were plenty of people feeling the burn in the 40-degree weather. Sanders supporters echoed some of his biggest talking points, including free public education, income and racial inequality, and combating greed on Wall Street. Nick Bernard says it's important to differentiate between Sanders and his rival, former New York Senator and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton.
I think when people say that, it minimizes the difference between the candidates and shuts down any discussion on, you know, who took, you know, $250,000 in speaking fees, who took, you know, money from Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan. I think it, you know, shuts down meaningful discussion that, you know, otherwise would sway a lot of people.
Volunteers circled the armory before the rally, reminding supporters to vote for Sanders delegates next Tuesday. Volunteer Diana Wright made the rounds with a sample ballot.
You need to vote for his delegates on row A also, because they're the people who are going to vote for Bernie in the convention in Philadelphia. So it's very, very important. Don't just vote for Bernie. Vote for everybody on row A.
Once inside the venue, supporters had to wait 3 hours for the senator to arrive. Finally, Sanders emerged. The lively crowd appeared to catch him off guard.
This is a large crowd, a raucous crowd. Oh. And a very loud crowd.
Sanders mostly stuck to his standard stump speech, issues like income inequality and climate change. He also called for a nationwide ban on hydrofracking.
We need to put an end to fracking, not only in New York and Vermont, but in every state of the country.
Sanders had credited New York activists for their work on the state's hydrofracking ban. But one of the loudest cheers came after Sanders criticized Wall Street, super PACs, and the owners of America's biggest retailer, Walmart.
A rigged economy is when the working people of this country subsidize the wealthiest family in America. So I say to the Walton family, get off of welfare, pay your workers a living wage.
He also called for the ending of corporate prisons and detention centers. He said Americans are disproportionately imprisoned due to their race. Sanders emphasized that although whites and blacks smoke marijuana at approximately the same rate, African Americans are 4 times as likely to be imprisoned for possessing it. He also said that police departments need to reflect the communities they serve, and that the U.S. needs to cut down on militarized police.
Let us also be clear that we need to train police departments all over this country to understand that lethal force is the last option, not the first option.
Sanders trails Clinton in polls in New York, and he urged voters to make history.
And what I have learned in this campaign so far is we win when the voter turnout is high, we lose when it is low. Let us next week have the highest voter turnout in the history of New York State.
Indeed, this year's primary has given New York voters unusual clout. A few hours after Sanders wrapped up, Republican frontrunner Donald Trump rallied a few blocks away. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Patrick Garrett.
Meanwhile, new poll finds that Bernie Sanders has narrowed the gap with Hillary Clinton in the New York presidential primary race, but Clinton leads in key voting regions. We get more from our Capitol correspondent, Karen DeWitt.
The Siena College poll finds Clinton 10 points ahead of Sanders at 52% to 42%, but Clinton is leading in voter-rich New York City and the surrounding suburbs. The two are even upstate, but only about one quarter of total Democratic voters live there. Siena's Steve Greenberg says there's also an age divide between the two candidates, with Clinton leading among older voters and Sanders ahead among the younger voters.
Those voters under 35, 3-1 with Sanders, whereas those voters 55 and older are with Clinton by 22 points. Now, historically, older voters are better voters. The real question is, do those young voters feel the burn enough to come out and actually vote on Tuesday? If they do, this can make that race much closer.
The former U.S. Senator from New York, First Lady, and former Secretary of State is also ahead with African American and Latino voters, but Clinton and Vermont Senator Sanders are near even with white voters. Greenberg says much will depend on voter turnout on Tuesday. While Sanders has the support of the state's left-leaning Working Families Party, Clinton will have get-out-the-vote help from many of the major unions.
This is going to be a ground game. Look, it's a primary. Even in a good turnout primary, you wouldn't expect much more than a third of voters to come out. So it really will depend on whether the Sanders campaign or the Clinton campaign has the better ground game.
On the Republican side, candidate Donald Trump is not known for his ground game and strong get-out-the-vote efforts. He's relied more heavily on the media and attendance at his large rallies to stimulate voters. But the poll finds Trump has a strong lead, with the support of half of all New York's GOP voters. John Kasich and Ted Cruz are running more than 20 points behind, says Greenberg.
We have Trump at 50%, Kasich 27%, Cruz 17%.
In the Republican primary, the demographics are reversed, with more than half of the GOP voters living upstate. The New York primary is not a winner-take-all contest. The delegates will be chosen in the state's congressional districts. In the Republican contest, if a candidate wins more than 50% in a congressional district, they get all three delegates. But if they're below half of the votes, then other candidates are awarded the delegates proportionately. Greenberg says that creates a much more competitive race.
If you can keep Trump below 50 in any congressional district, whoever finishes second is going to get a delegate there. And it's all about the delegates. Look, you know, Donald Trump has a very difficult roadmap to getting 1,237 delegates, which is what he needs to win in Cleveland on the first ballot.
Depending on the outcome of New York's primary, the path to an uncontested convention could become even harder for Trump. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government, politics. I'm David Gustina. 8 days before the New York primary, April 19th, Ohio Governor John Kasich took a three-way stop tour of the area on Monday, making stops in Albany, North Greenbush, and Saratoga Springs. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas caught up with the Republican presidential candidate at LaSalle Institute. And Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump, meanwhile, traveled around the state from New York City to Buffalo this week and spoke to a packed crowd in an airplane hangar at Griffith International Airport in Rome. As WRVO's Tom Magnarelli reports, Trump hit hard on New York's economy and the political system.
Thank you, everybody. Wow, this is beautiful.
Trump started by pulling no punches as he listed statistics about the loss of manufacturing jobs in the Utica-Rome area and the median household income in the state.
What's going on? Is anybody working up here? We got to change this. It's terrible. The economy is rigged. The banking system is rigged. And that's why a lot of you haven't had an effective wage increase in 20 years, folks.
He says he shares a common view with Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders on recent trade deals the U.S. has made with Pacific countries, namely that they are a disaster for jobs at home.
When I get in office, I'll do real trade deals where we're going to bring our jobs back. Just rely on it, folks.
He emphasized how his campaign is self-funded.
I'm working for you.
And how he has the most loyal supporters. In Rome, New York, I'm Tom Magnarelli.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Well, New York is in play in the presidential contest. The primary coming up next week, Alan, Tuesday, the 19th of April. And boy, did we see a visit this week. Of course, we had Hillary Clinton campaigning last week. And this week, Bernie Sanders on the Democratic side making his way across the state, as well as Donald Trump and John Kasich. Your thoughts on the presidential swing in New York State?
Interestingly, you did not mention the word Cruz, or the guy known by the nomenclature supplied to him by Donald Trump as Lying Ted. He's coming in a distant third. Are we surprised? No. This is a guy who insulted all New Yorkers. He tries to get out of it, but basically he said he didn't trust their instincts and their politics. And of course, they have responded to pollsters' questions and put the guy in third place, something that he is not used to. The Trump homeboy numbers are huge, just huge for Trump, and he will do very well in New York State. The question is, how well? The way that New York does things is sort of convoluted. You get delegates based on congressional districts. So if you get a few congressional districts which aren't Trump, he loses a lot of the delegates he would have if it was an at-large election throughout New York State allocating the delegates. Not only that, but I don't think there's a huge love for Trump among the top establishment type folks in New York. So we see Trump at the top of his voice yelling, "It's a rigged convention, it's a rigged convention." Yeah, no question about it. As rigged as the rules will allow it to be. Of course, there are those who are coming back in and say, well, he knew that when he began, yeah, but he thought he was going to go into the convention with all the votes. Now it looks like he may fall a little bit short. If he's as good a negotiator as he says he is, one would think that he would find a way of bringing it over the top, maybe with a vice presidential pledge or something like that. In any case, New York, for one of the first times ever, has a chance to make a real difference.
And on the Democratic side, of course, we see in polls Hillary Clinton leading. And you've talked about this, not only in this race, but in all races. Turnout.
Well, David, that's what, as I have said, that is what Bernie Sanders yells. If, in fact, the young come out, which we know that they don't in most elections, and they turn out in a larger group than expected, the pollsters could be proven all wrong because they can't get to the kids to ask them the questions because of the cell phones and other reasons. I think that a lot of young people are going to turn out in this campaign. Sanders' work on college education and his words, which are that, you know, that it's too expensive, will, I think, ring true with an awful lot of young folks who will now find it in their self-interest to get out of bed. There's only so much... Well, let's just put it this way, partying you can do.
Well, what will happen in New York? Also, a major seat is the former Senate leader, Dean Skelos, who was convicted of corruption. His seat is open. The candidates Kaminsky and McGrath, and Todd Kaminsky especially. And as to Todd Kaminsky, you had a conversation with Casey Seiler from the Times Union for your Capital Connection show this week about the race, about Governor Cuomo's role in it, and even Mel Brooks.
Well, as you know, Mel Brooks is the granduncle of Kaminsky, who's a prosecutor, successful prosecutor, who's running. The absent man in all of this is Governor Cuomo, who says he's endorsed Kaminsky, the Democrat. But if history is our guide, he's not going to do too much to help him because it would mean a change in the leadership of the state Senate. And Cuomo loves or seems to love, at least according to the way I see it, having the Republicans in charge. That could be a real onus for him because he's obviously positioning himself to run for governor again as a Democrat. And why is he supporting a Republican state Senate? He would argue he's not. I would argue he is. In any case, Kaminsky's uncle is the granduncle is Mel Brooks. He did a robocall for him. He's the 2,000-year-old man. And finally, he's getting a postcard saying, "How are you, Pop?"
Well, we have another race that has been polled. It's not official yet, but do you speak with Representative Republican Chris Gibson for your Congressional Corner program? He's from Kinderhook. And he's basically indicated he wants to run for governor. And there is a poll now which says that the governor, Andrew Cuomo, is leading 49 to 26, 23 points. And, of course, 2 years ahead is a long way to go.
Well, of course. And here's the deal. Everybody knows the name Cuomo. Most people in New York State don't know the name Chris Gibson. The onus is going to be on him if he gets the nomination. He's got a lot of people who want that nomination besides him. But he's going to have to get out there. He's already doing that. He's talking to all the leaders in the state. And he's got to somehow raise recognition of his own name. Or, frankly, he's going to lose.
Finally, let's have some fun, Alan. Are you ready? Same poll. You ready? What best defines upstate New York? New Yorkers were asked where downstate New York ends and upstate New York begins, a classic sort of quiz. And here's what we've got. Everything north of New York City, everything north of Westchester County, everything north of Poughkeepsie, everything north of Poughkeepsie, but excluding Buffalo. They didn't say what Buffalo was. Something else or, you know, just in general, what's upstate? What's your thoughts on that?
Upstate, the first one was correct. Everything north of New York City, everything north of the Bronx. You get to Yonkers, you're in upstate, according to the way that many people see it here. That's where the Republicans can get themselves elected into the Senate seat. That's why they have controlled it one way or the other. You know, it's this business of beyond Poughkeepsie. It's not true. It's north of the Bronx.
Secession.
There's always people who will do secession. Upstate cries for secession every once in a while. Downstate cries for secession. Staten Island cries for secession. Take an awful lot to secede.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week marked Equal Pay Day, the date that symbolizes how far into the year women must work to catch up to what men were paid the year before. That's based on national figures. But as the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn tells us, New York and a few other northeastern states fare better.
Nationally, women who are employed full-time year-round are paid, on average, 79 cents for every dollar paid to men. The National Partnership for Women and Families released for Equal Pay Day an analysis of the gender wage gap for all 50 states and the District of Columbia. Vicki Shabo is the National Partnership's vice president. She says the study finds that Washington, D.C. came in best in the nation for having the smallest wage gap at 10 cents. New York came in second with 13 cents.
New York's wage gap is smaller than the United States. In New York, women who work full-time year-round are paid 87 cents for every dollar paid to men, amounting to an annual average median wage gap of about $6,800.
The study uses data from the U.S. Census Bureau. Shabo says if the gap in New York were eliminated, each woman who holds a full-time year-round job in the state could afford to buy food for one more year, pay for mortgage and utilities for 3 more months, or pay rent for nearly 6 more months. The study shows that in Connecticut, the wage gap is 19 cents, in Massachusetts, 18 cents, in New Hampshire, 24 cents, and in Vermont, 16 cents. Szabo says passing the Paycheck Fairness Act is one pillar for achieving pay equity. The legislation would close loopholes in the Equal Pay Act, help to break patterns of pay discrimination, and establish stronger workplace protections for women. The bill was introduced by Connecticut Democratic Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro. Szabo also promotes another focus.
But the other thing that we need to do is create more family-friendly policies in workplaces.
Policies, she says, such as paid sick days, paid family and medical leave, and legislation to raise the minimum wage. New York is ahead of the curve, having just passed legislation for paid family leave and raising the minimum wage. The Independent Women's Forum calls itself the group at the forefront of debunking the wage gap statistic and so-called war on women. IWF officials say Equal Pay Day is the day that liberal feminists, progressive groups, and their allies in Washington perpetuate the idea that the economy is a battle between the sexes. IWF released its own report called Working for Women, A Modern Agenda for Improving Women's Lives, and it focuses on job creation, workplace flexibility, and returning resources to individual women. Managing Director Carrie Lucas opposes a federal paid family leave policy.
Rather than creating a one-size-fits-all compensation system and rules that would impact the compensation packages of all workers, we want to try to make it to give people more options. And one way this report calls for doing that is to make it easier for people to save to provide for their own periods of leave.
She suggests that policymakers allow for the creation of personal care accounts to save pre-tax dollars that could be used for family leave. The national partnership Szabo says equal pay is an issue that affects families, and the presidential candidate should be talking more about it.
If the wage gap were to close, the average family could afford another 1.6 years worth of groceries, another 7 months of mortgage and utility payments, or 11 more months of rent, or 9 more years of birth control. So this has real economic consequences, and the candidates across the aisle should absolutely be talking about this as a core issue of economic importance for families and for the nation's economy overall.
Meanwhile, MTV's Look Different anti-bias campaign unleashed a nationwide protest of the gender pay gap with the creation of a certain tool, as discussed in this video.
That's why we created the 79% Work Clock. The 79% Work Clock reminds you and your coworkers of a simple fact. After a certain point in time, women aren't being paid. When a woman hears its chime, she might as well go home.
And that chime, for the average 9-to-5 workday, sounds at 3:20 p.m. Another wage gap calculator is being unveiled in Massachusetts, where the Treasurer's Office unveiled a new website.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1616. Or just listen on the web at WAMC.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.